Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. Glad you could all be with us today for our final show of May. I've lost my focus for a moment because all of our audio, nobody can hear anything in their headphones. So we'll just carry on. Heath Garrett is with us today. Of course, he's a Republican strategist. He works very closely with Johnny Isaacson. And Heath, of course, we're glad to have you on Political Rewind today. Mary Margaret Oliver, Democratic member of the State House from Decatur, is on the show with us today. And we're really happy to welcome back to the studio Charles Cook. Chuck Cook is one of the leading immigration attorneys in the Southeast. And Chuck, we always like to turn to you to help us understand what's happening with immigration. So we're going to try to, you know what, let's everybody take off their headsets. Let's talk because the headsets aren't working. Okay. Let me start, Chuck. We said that we wanted to spend a considerable amount of time on the show today talking about where we stand on immigration matters today. President Trump has taken some actions that we'll get into in just a couple of minutes, most recently overnight last night, announcing a tariff that he wants to impose on the Mexican government if they don't crack down on immigration into their country. But let's, before we get there, let's talk about something bigger. Before we went on the air, Mary Margaret Oliver said, you know, I don't think a lot of people really understand what's going on in terms of the most recent history of immigration in this country. Chuck, whether you agree with President Trump or not, there is a crisis at the border. He would say it's a crisis of security. But there are many people who believe what it really is a humanitarian crisis. And it is true that we have thousands of people trying to get across the border into this country, and that they are now primarily families trying to come into the country. So there's no question that there's a crisis at the border, is there?
Well, there's certainly a larger number of people coming to the border. We've always had people coming illegally to the United States. The numbers we're seeing today harken back to about the numbers in 06 and 07, last time Johnny Isaacson was working on this issue, but now nowhere near the record numbers we saw in the late 90s and the early 2000s under Bush, when we were literally picking up 3 million people a year at the border. What we're seeing, I think, is a shock for people because we haven't seen this in a decade. And there are also very few Mexicans that are coming in. It was always Mexicans and almost always Mexican men that were coming in previously.
Because they were coming up here looking for work.
They were economic migrants. Now this migration at the border is somewhat economic, but a lot of it is social and crime related. In the countries people are coming from, in the what we call the Northern Triangle, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. We're seeing that the crime rates in those countries are at historically high levels. Security is non-existent. The governments are, on their best day, non-responsive, if not at least somewhat beholden to some of the criminal organizations in those countries. And there's no doubt that the criminal organizations are also responsible for getting these people up here. They are literally arranging the travel. I mean, you need a travel agent to do what a lot of people are doing, going across, walking to Mexico in a month. But at the same time, they're coming in because they truly have a fear. And we look at our own laws on immigration. We have a law that says if you are afraid of something in your home country, you have a right to ask for asylum in the United States, regardless of how you got here. And you can literally present yourself at a port of entry. This is, you know, the place you drive through at the southern or northern border. And you can tell the officer, I want asylum. So those people were doing that. People were literally coming to the border and asking for asylum. And about 4 months ago, the government started what was called metering. And this has never been done to my recollection in my 30 years of immigration law, where they say we only have room for 50 people today. And then if you're more than 50, then wait in Mexico. We also implemented a policy a few months ago of saying, okay, you're in the United States, you're applying for asylum, we're going to send you back to your last country that you came through to wait for your hearing.
And those are Trump administration policies.
Very unique policy. So what we're seeing right now, there's at least in one city over in Tijuana, there's 7,000 people in the line waiting for their turn to be metered into the United States. But we also saw evidence of what happens when it breaks down. What happens when it's so dangerous where you are? This part of Mexico is in some really bad parts of town, whether you're in Juarez, whether you're in Tijuana, whether you're down in Tamaulipas. And so people, instead of staying in Mexico where they have no money and no food, yesterday, over 1,000 of these migrants came to the double-walled fence. So we have a fence that's two fences.
Where is
this? You see in prisons. This is outside of El Paso. And the southernmost fence, let's say, is not as well-maintained as the northernmost fence.
The southernmost fence is a Mexican fence?
No, they're both American fences.
Okay,
they're both in the United
American.
States. But it's easier to maintain the one that's right by the agents as
sure.
opposed to the one on the inside. So whether it was cut, whether it was damaged, 1,000 people literally walked through that in a line and sat down and waited for Border Patrol to come pick them up.
Okay. You said a lot there. So let me try to unpack some of what you just said, including getting to this incident that got a lot of news
right.
and that certainly the Trump administration made a lot out of. Heath,
yes.
When we talk about metering and this notion that it's never happened before, I think that Republicans who essentially agree with President Trump that we need to do something about security on the border would say one of the issues is we're running out of spaces to put people, that without some sort of system to monitor how many people are coming in, that metering may sound like a punitive measure, and perhaps it is, but we also are running, there just isn't housing to put people, there aren't facilities, right?
Absolutely. That's part of the crisis, right? Is that we've tightened security over the last three administrations.
Mm-hmm.
President Bush started tightening security. President Obama actually increased some measures of security, maybe not everything that Republicans wanted. And then now, obviously, Donald Trump has made this a central issue of his campaign and his presidency. Now you have the capacity to meter in a way that you didn't have in the past. And we also have this dramatic increase, at least the largest number we've seen in the last 12 years. Charles Wright, we had a big surge in the early part of the first part of this century that went away a little bit with the recession and with the toughening. And so all of a sudden we have this. On top of that, we have due process rules and laws in the United States of America. And so if we remember the kerfuffle last year with saying, oh, we can't warehouse people and or children.
Especially children,
right? And so we have literally run out of physical capacity. There are not enough judges. There are not enough lawyers. There are not enough caseworkers along the border to handle the mass influx of people seeking asylum or coming here just illegally, not even seeking asylum. So that's helping create the humanitarian crisis. And I'll answer the original question, Bill. It is a crisis. It's a humanitarian crisis, somewhat manufactured by the policies of countries in Central and South America, somewhat manufactured by our tightening of the security. And look, quite frankly, by the inaction of the Congress, both Republican and Democrats, over the last 20 years to be able to come to a compromise on a comprehensive plan to deal with it at our southern border. And we had 109,000 people in April, come across the border illegally, which is the largest number. You multiply that by 12 months, May is going to exceed that number and become the largest record in a while. And so you're talking about 1.5 million, maybe 2 million people a year. I don't think the American people want that many people coming without some controlled fashion.
Well,
and that's
how many people have been apprehended. There are others that have come. That's
right, that are not being apprehended. That's right. And another interesting fact here, Bill, I think going back to 2004, people always think this is a Mexico problem. Johnny Isaacson and I went to the border in 2006. We went in the tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
We saw all the fences that had been erected at that time. At that time, 40% of everybody coming across the border were not from Mexico or from Central America. So there's actually a large percentage of folks who know that our southern border is a way to get in. And these organized crime gangs, whatever you want to call them, cartels, they're making money off of this, and they're slipping bad people in.
Let me just go back to one thing you said. So, Mary Margaret, Heath's comment that he doesn't think the American people want, say, a surge of as many as 2 million people to come into the country, I would suspect that we'd have different opinions on that.
I don't know that we do. I think American people want a secure border. Mm-hmm. But they also recognize in these details, in this complicated global set of issues, that it is a humanitarian crisis. And the change from trying to manage Mexican men who are coming to work contrast to what's coming today, families, substantial numbers of children, it's a totally different management issue for the American people and for Congress, who is not acting. When American people see children dying in a custody of American immigration officials, they will probably not tolerate that, in my opinion. They didn't. Not going to tolerate the cages, not going to tolerate children dying in American custody. That reflects an absence of an ability to manage a totally different and unique humanitarian crisis that is at our border. That's the reality. If you're a leading bureaucrat, how do you manage 1,000 people or thousands of children, 1 million people coming in, and how do you satisfy the American people who do want to address in a rational way a complicated problem? The problem of all that, one of the major problems, is the hysterical Trumpian politicalization of what is a normal fear that people would have in response to 1 million people coming into our country. He is exacerbating the fear. He has said publicly many times, this is my political campaign issue. This is how I get reelected. And as a politician who also recognizes on a day-to-day basis, speaking for myself, the painfulness of compromise, in many cases, the people in Washington have not been willing to engage in painful but productive compromises.
All right, let's do this. I want to take a break a little earlier than usual in the show today. Our engineering team is standing by to come in and figure out.
The triage team.
Yeah, that's the triage team. They're going to see if they can fix the audio in here. We're doing a pretty good job hearing each other, though.
I can hear you great.
I can hear you all.
We're doing well, but I'll tell you what, we'll be even better if we can get our headphones fixed. So you're listening to Political Rewind. Alex is coming into the studio to see what he can do. We'll be back in a minute.
Nearly 8 months after Hurricane Michael struck the Florida coast, Congress has yet to pass a disaster relief bill. What normally takes weeks has taken more than 230 days.
That money could potentially have already been on the street. There could be projects underway.
I'm Ari Shapiro, reporting from the Florida Panhandle on what this means for one small town this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 till 7 today on GPB and gpbnews.org.
Hi, this is Bill Nigut here to tell you that we're taking Political Rewind back on the road. On Monday evening, June 3rd, we'll be in Cartersville. We'll do the show in front of a live audience at the Grand Theater, and we'd love to have you join us. If you'd like free tickets, go to our website, politicalrewind.org, and you'll find a link where you can register. We're looking forward to seeing you in Cartersville on June 3rd.
I'm Taylor Gann, GPB's Morning Edition producer. I've had the chance to cover the full spectrum of sports in Georgia, including women's basketball, the NCAA National Championship, and Atlanta United, who won the city's first pro championship since 1995.
All different people all come together in these games, and it really just represents all of Atlanta. And I think it means a lot to the entire city to have something like this.
We bring you the latest on sports right here on GPB.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR and thanks.
We're back on Political Rewind. Chuck Cook, Mary Margaret Oliver, Heath Garrett are with us for the show today. We're going to talk immigration for quite a bit. And in a moment, we're going to get into some of the most recent developments with the Trump administration. Before we do, very quickly, I want all of you to engage in this. You know, Chuck, Heath made a good point in the first part of the show. It isn't as if Republicans and Democrats both have, in fact, over the last couple of decades, tried to solve this problem in Washington. George W. Bush, who comes from a border state,
he understood the
dedicated to trying to find a solution. And the effort to do bipartisan immigration reform, which would have provided a path for undocumented people to stay in the country, not as citizens necessarily, it collapsed because primarily conservatives refused to go along with it.
There were some Democrats that refused to go along with it as well. Let's name President Obama as one of those that did not sign on to that bill.
That's right.
Then you had it in 2013, another opportunity to fix this. But once again, in the middle of the second term of the president, when he's weakened, when he doesn't have the pull or the bully pulpit to move forward, and the House refuses to vote on something that clearly would have passed the House and allotted, I don't know, something like $50 billion to border enforcement out of the Senate with almost 70 votes. So, I mean, there are votes to fix this, but if you let the tail keep wagging the dog, the minority, you're not going to be able to fix it. A great poll came out yesterday that said 77% of Americans support a pathway to citizenship for DACA kids. I mean, 77%. There's very few things in America 77% of the people agree on, and yet we don't move forward.
One of the fascinating things to me, because I've talked with my Republican friends, as soon as they know an individual who's been deported, as soon as they know that person, they can talk rationally. And we all know these people. We all know these people who've been deported out of our immediate family of workers or friends or faith-based organizations. We have to remember those people and for at least a few minutes set aside the harshness and the terrible destructiveness of this polarized issue.
So, Heath, I want to ask you to see if you can comment on an observation that I'd like to make here.
Sure.
We all know that President Trump, from the day he came down the escalator in Trump Tower to announce his candidacy in 2016, believed that talking about immigration and the dangers that that illegal immigration imposed were a ticket to succeed as a candidate for president. I'm not sure he actually thought he'd be the president of the United States,
right,
but he obviously saw that as a crucial issue. In the years since, he has continued to come back to that issue over and over and over again. And I want to ask you a question.
Right.
If you buy the theory that Trump never really expected he was going to be president, that he just thought this would be a great adventure, he ended up in the White House, he didn't come in there with an agenda, lots to accomplish, because that hadn't been what his thinking was. He was a business executive. And there are times when I think maybe the president comes back to it again and again and again, because that's the only issue he's really got on his... He doesn't have a lot of other things that interest him, excite him. So in addition to mobilizing his base, it's kind of an issue that he thinks he understands and knows something about.
Well,
is that a terribly harsh assessment?
No. You know, trying to get into Donald Trump's mind, I think there were a lot of people around him who may have been surprised that he actually won the presidency. I don't want to buy into that he didn't think he could win the presidency. I think Donald Trump for 40 years is the exact same person we see every day on Twitter in the White House, whether it was in the New York Times. I think he's a real estate developer at heart. I think that when he wrote or co-wrote The Art of the Deal, a lot of what's in that book he actually believes, and we're seeing it play out full script in the presidency out there. But I think you're right. The reason why he came down, rode down that elevator is that when you do polling in the Republican primary, almost anywhere in the country, even in the border states where you have a much higher immigrant population, even in Republican districts, the number one or number two issue often is illegal immigration when it comes to moving voters to some kind of action. And so I think the marketing genius in Donald Trump, whether you like it or not, he's a marketing genius in him, sees and goes back to an issue that he knows moves voters passionately, particularly within the base of the Republican Party. And as Charles pointed out, nationally, among independent voters, particularly in the swing states that are going to matter in the upcoming upcoming 2020 election, whether that's Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, North Carolina, Georgia is now in play. You know, this is an issue that independents want both security and some pathway, and he's going to try to walk that very fine line because they do want pathway to citizenship, but they also want some extra security at the border in exchange for it.
Calling Donald Trump a marketing genius or a stable genius gives me some heartburn. We can debate his success as a businessman or whether it was any authenticity to any of the things he says. It is true, and if you reflect yesterday on his 17-minute diatribe on the White House lawn, that was one of the more peculiar expressions he has. He believes, I do think this is true, he was responsible for getting elected. He. Me. Not the Russians, but me. And that is reflective of him using immigration consistently. He credits that in his mind with his election. And he will not change on that. Where are the more balanced heads in Congress, Senate, and House that are going to seek real solutions with the painful compromises that are necessary? And I keep asking that question because Donald Trump is not going to help. He's only going to be negative in this look for solutions.
Well, part of the problem with that is who he has surrounded himself with. His main and principal policy advisor on immigration is a guy named Stephen Miller, who used to work in
for
Congress
Sessions.
For Sessions, yeah. And he is as nativist as they come, period, end of story. And he's been that way his whole life. He went to high school with the kids of a friend of mine, and he's never been anything other than that. But he's only 33 years old, and he doesn't have to compromise because he's not an elected official. But everybody else that Trump has put in the administration comes from the far side of the Republican Party who do not like immigrants. The Republican Party has been great on immigration for a long time. I mean, Ronald Reagan and George Bush were the principal reasons we have an amnesty.
Yes, Johnny Isaacson was a big believer in immigration
reform. Well, Johnny even last year, he voted for DACA last year.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, this is an issue that splits the GOP and used to split the Democratic Party, not so much anymore, but it used to. And that's why you haven't seen any poll numbers move against immigrants or immigration, even though Trump's been in there for 2.5 years. In fact, the numbers are a little slightly more favorable towards immigration than they were when Trump started. And so you've got a situation where, okay, we have a problem at the border caused by different factors that some are in our control, some are out of our control. But punishing people, having children die in custody is not a way to fix that problem. There are ways you can try to fix it. Obama tried a few, because keep in mind, Obama had a similar issue in 2014 after DACA and DAPA came out. And he implemented 3 specific policies in Central America where a lot of these immigrants were coming from. He implemented a program of refugees for children whose parents were in the United States. He implemented a marketing program. I mean, I don't know what other word you put for it. It's a marketing program saying, stay in your country. It's dangerous. And then he also implemented a multi-million-dollar job training program, job creation program, investment program. All 3 of those programs have been eliminated by the administration. And so what was keeping at least some people back is gone. Now you have the multinational cartels advertising people to come saying, you know, you got to get up here before the wall is built. And so if you keep pounding on the wall and give people excuse for people to come, you're going to see these types of crises along with the terrible crime situation.
And I'll say that there is a little bit more balance in the Trump administration than maybe Charles. There's no question at times that the Stephen Millers win the day. He did create a team of rivals. There are a lot of economists and others who are looking at the market and trade policy and other things to provide balance. And look, Trump is Trump, right? He's the president. He's El Jefe. He's the guy who's going to make the final decision. And sometimes he chooses the right side of that line, and sometimes he chooses the more economically oriented Republicans in his administration. I think the surge of seekers over the last 30 to 45 days has mattered. There's no question that in his mind he knew he was going to get anywhere with the Democratic Congress on this issue. There had been some attempts last year, right? He put DACA on the table, which is the first president to do that. So let's get a grand compromise. And both sides blame each other for walking away from those talks. folks last year in the White House, and I do believe there's probably a little bit of blame on both sides based on what I know through Johnny and other senators. However, he finally decided he was going to make everybody talk about this issue, right? If you just left it up to be another issue on the table, and in total Trump fashion, he went and asked his staff to find a very provocative way to get attention on this issue. And if nothing else, if that was his goal, he's done it, because in the last 24 hours, everybody's paying attention to this.
Let's talk about the economy here. Let's talk about if I wanted to express a wish to the rational people on both sides, I'd talk about the economy. Mexico is the second largest importer of all materials. Our agricultural imports are $5.9 billion. Fresh fruit, $5.8 billion. Wine and beer, $3.6 billion. We import from Mexico. Yeah. The idea of imposing a tax on working people to pay tariffs is such a ridiculous economic...
Well, I'm glad you introduced exactly the latest story I wanted to talk about. Yesterday morning during that scrum on the White House lawn, the president said, I'm going to have some big news about immigration. It's going to be important. And by this morning, we learned that what Mary Margaret is talking about is exactly what happened. Chuck, the White House has said that beginning June 10th, we will impose a 5% tariff on all goods
everything
coming in from Mexico to the United States if the Mexican government doesn't take aggressive action to stop people from crossing the border from Mexico to the United States. I want to, before we talk about it, just Mick Mulvaney did a conference call
last night.
You were kind enough to share the transcript with us. Robert Jimison pulled the audio of it. And one of the things that Mulvaney was asked on this call was, it's the American people who are going to pay for these tariffs.
He didn't answer that question. I can't wait to hear
the audio. And here's what Mulvaney said in answer to that.
Americans are paying for this right now. Illegal immigration comes at a cost. The American taxpayer is paying for what's going on at the border. The president has asked Congress to help. Congress has failed to help. I can personally tell you it's been at least 6 weeks since I met with Senate Democrats to literally beg them for a situation. And instead of helping us, they left town. Now we are asking Mexico to do what it can because Congress will not.
So, all right, we should point out, in all fairness, that Republicans left town, too.
Yeah.
It was a holiday break. Yeah. By the way, Robert Jimison...
That was great spin, by the way, by Mulvaney.
Robert was actually on the call as well. I didn't realize that until he just sent me a text pointing that out. All right, so let's set aside just for a moment, Chuck, the question of whether you ought to be imposing tariffs to solve a completely different problem, a problem that has to do with security and whatever. Let's put that to the side for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back to it. Is Mexico equipped? The other thing we learned in this call is there are no standards.
Well, that's the thing, is we don't know what it means to enforce their border. Literally nothing.
They haven't come up with, you better reduce illegal immigration across the border by 15%. There's none of that.
None
it's
of
just,
that.
We'll decide when you've succeeded.
And the tariff is 5% now, but then it goes up incrementally till August when it's 25% few weeks.
So the first question
he
is...
He did go on to say, though, that he hopes they don't have to implement the tariff.
This is all ridiculous.
It's only 10 days away, so... Yeah.
All right, hold on.
Get to work.
First of all, can Mexico take steps... Is the president have any point in saying that Mexico is not doing the job it can do to stop immigrants at its borders instead of having a situation where they flood Mexico and then find their way to the United States?
I think this is an example of Trump's thinking about other countries, that maybe we're the only country where it's not a dictatorship and everybody else is, and therefore... This monolithic Mexico can magically make something happen when Mexico is a elected democracy just like ours, and they have money to spend. They have to get allocated by their Congress.
Yeah, but they have concerns about border security,
too. And they do. And what they do for that is they allocate mostly their military. They have a quasi-border patrol like we have, but they use their military within their U.S., something we don't because of the Posse Comitatus Act. And they have, in fact, turned away hundreds of thousands of people on the Guatemalan border. But there are, it's very difficult for them to allocate the funds to do that. Plus, Mexico's immigration laws are more liberal than our immigration
laws.
Yes,
but the president is saying that's the problem.
Well, but that's not Mexico's problem. That's Trump's problem. And so if Mexico wants to say, you know, we're going to allow in and give work permits to refugees, we're going to allow people to apply there. The thing is, Mexico does tell any that they encounter, you are allowed to apply for asylum in our country. They simply don't want to. They don't want to go to Mexico. They want to go to the United States. So there's a limit to what Mexico can do. There is free travel in Mexico. So once you get in, you can go anywhere you want to in Mexico. They don't have the ability legally, morally, or militarily, or police-wise, to stop people from traveling once they're in their country.
And I think this is Trump's point, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, we have a 2,000-plus-mile border. Mexico only has a 150-mile border on the southern border down with those important countries that are of real value to us in our longer-term foreign policy. And so, look, Trump has said and made part of the latest version of NAFTA that there were sidebar negotiations with the Mexican government about increasing and improving their border security at their southern border and stopping some of this. He clearly feels like those whatever verbal agreements that they had on the side have not been met. I think that this is not just something that came up over the last 24 hours. There's no question the administration is having conversations with Mexico and trying to incentivize them. I think there's a legitimate fight within the Republican Party on our side as to whether or not we should be using tariffs to do this, but yeah. Whether it is unified well, in
Chairman
half the
Grassley.
Country. But yeah. there's a real problem there, and Mexico can do more, and that he is using his style, which is very unconventional, to try to move the negotiations forward. He tried to make this part of the USMCA and realized they weren't going to be able to do that. And so there were sidebar discussions going on. And it'll be interesting to see if there can't be some movement.
And those sidebar discussions are what caused Mexico to put more military, more border security on their southern border. You know, the reality is, if Trump said, you know, we're going to give Mexico $5 billion to do this.
Well, I think that's where the Senate will maybe
you know,
might go
they,
with
they
that.
Might do that.
That was my next.
Maybe he could take that from the military.
Mary Margaret,
I don't know.
That's precisely the comment I wanted to have you weigh in on. It, in fact, instead of punishing, why not help?
Chairman Grassley was pretty articulate today on this ridiculous idea.
Yes, being a member of the Senate from Iowa puts him in a very important position.
Very important, respected Republican. There are possible solutions to enhance the opportunity of Mexico and these other countries to solve problems that will satisfy the needs of America, satisfy the values of American citizens and American values, voters. I am a little bit troubled by suggesting that Trump has hired a team of rivals a la Abraham Lincoln. I don't think that's what he's done. He's hires people, ignores them, or doesn't.
Well, but his trade representative has already said he opposes this 5% tariff. Just to be clear, there
it's
may
not
be
a tariff. It's a tax on working people of the United States. The suggestion that it's anything of a productive idea is contrary to any hope to have a rational discussion. I'm encouraged by Senator Grassley stepping forward. It may be an indication that some of the Republican leaders, and of course Johnny Isaacson would be one who might join this team. He says we've got to be a little bit more realistic about some solutions. There's a lot of smart people that do studies about negotiation tactics as a litigation lawyer and as a politician in the back room negotiating stuff. I'm familiar with the value of being a total irrational bully that cannot be tolerated for 5 minutes in a negotiation session. That's what Trump is. It's a technique. It's a style. It's never going to change for him. Are the Republican and Democratic leaders of Congress going to say, we see a bully in action, we understand it's a technique, we understand he's not going to change, he's not going to have advisors who are going to help him, we have to assume some leadership.
Heath, you made a point that that the administration has sort of suggested they hope they don't have to impose the first 5%, let alone the next five after that. So there is wiggle room for the President of the United States here. And if Mary Margaret is right, there are Republicans who are going to go to him, Republicans from the Hill, and quietly, they're not going to go in open rebellion, or few of them are, we know that, but But they're going to quietly say, let's not be so hasty about this.
Well, there's no question that it's already happening. I think that it was actually referenced in the press conference last night that the White House had had multiple conversations with four or five Republican senators, and they'd gotten some questions, A, about statutory authority to even do this,
yes.
Which it appears there may be a statutory authority to
there
do
may
this.
Be a loophole.
And you know, we're all lawyers here, and we're all good at finding those loopholes when they benefit us. But the second question was, right, there's almost overwhelming bipartisan support for what the president is doing with tariffs on China, because it has to do with their tariffs and their access to their markets. Mm-hmm. So it's a trade war, so to speak, or a trade battle.
This
all
is just
around.
A punitive
But this
action.
Is the first time we've seen tariffs used for what would otherwise be argued as social policy. The national security argument is one that I actually believe in and have said for 20 years Republicans should focus more on in regards to our southern border. But there again, both sides are not willing to give up their base on this, right? And
right.
So that's why we can't get compromise even when the Republicans control both the House and the Senate.
Right.
But I think it's going to be an interesting battle in the Republican caucus. But there again, the Republican Senate alone can't do anything because of the Democratic Congress, House. So the concern is, what is the end game here?
Well, let's take a look at another recent development from the Trump administration that is also going to find its, you know, it's going to be a war in Congress over. And that's the latest proposal, which we are told came out of Jared Kushner, to establish a merit-based immigration policy in which we would favor allowing highly educated, financially stable. Am I missing any of the adjectives around this, Chuck?
Yeah.
we would start picking and choosing between the people who just don't deserve to be in the United States and those who can make a valuable contribution in a different way. That same policy would also put severe limitations on how you can apply for and qualify for refugee status.
Well, I mean, let's be clear. This is Jared Kushner no more created this proposal than my dog. All right, this really comes out of the Miller part of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
It is a reflection of Senator Perdue's bill, which he introduced in the last legislative session, which ended up getting no co-sponsors. He now has one other co-sponsor besides Senator Cotton in this version of it. Basically, it eliminates family-based immigration in the United States. So, and it tells all 4 million people waiting in the line. Remember, we used to say, wait in the line. It tells all 4 million people in the family line, sorry, you're out. Now it's a merit-based system. The merit-based system favors anybody under the age of 30 with an advanced degree who's single. That's it. That's who it favors. Somebody like Heath would not qualify. He's too old. Sorry.
Well, no, I thought there was a genius exception.
Well, you're too old.
I think we ought to look at the children, the 8 children that won the spelling bee last night.
And yeah.
Just
you notice
let
that
them
too?
In. There one?
It was two Americans.
Two
native-born Americans.
Native-born.
I think they were all native-born Americans, but all 6 were Indian heritage. The other two were
every single valedictorian else. In DeKalb County now is, you know, it's.
So you're looking at that. So this bill, this idea, which is not even a bill. I mean, that's just the thing about this proposal. We haven't even seen it. There is no legislative language other than what we've seen in Senator Perdue's proposal. It will never, ever become law.
All right.
Well, and I would say, look, in fairness, I'm not going to defend the total thing because I worked with Senator Isaacs on a somewhat merit-based solution where we had Ted Kennedy.
It was
and
an
alternative.
What it was
an alternative.
Here's a section. We're going to experiment with these 50,000 green cards. It was a brilliant idea.
Right. But we do need, you know, there is a good, legitimate argument, rational argument for a reduction in refugee and asylum seeking while we do some of this other thing, because right now we have too many companies that are looking for employees who can't get the employees in the right way. You know that. And so I think that I see that as a reaction to the left, whose proposals right now are presidential Democratic nominees are all asylum, more refugees, straight
well,
pathway to
citizenship.
Well, let's
be clear about why, though.
With no alternative with security and these other things. And so I kind of look at both extremes and go, okay, guys.
Yeah, see, I don't
think
see
they're
that.
Responding
I,
to that.
I actually see a bunch of candidates, and, you know, I've been a lifelong Republican, a bunch of Democratic candidates who actually have security in their proposals. There is security out there. The deal that Trump rejected last year which was DACA for his wall, $25 billion straight up. He rejected it because it did not eliminate family immigration. And he walked away from that deal. That passes Congress easy. He walked away. So what we're really looking at here is, where are we going to go forward? The most refugees we've ever taken in a year. Now, I need to do a little lawyering here. Refugees are people who are outside the U.S., who go through a two-year vetting process. They really are refugees. They come in. We have never allowed in more than 75,000 ever in a given year. We don't have overflow refugees. Asylum seekers are those who are coming to our border or who are in the United States who are seeking to become protected because of their fear. Those numbers are high, but not at historic highs by any stretch of the imagination. What we've done, unfortunately, and you brought this up earlier, we have not kept pace in our immigration court system. We have not kept pace on spending at the asylum office. There actually is an asylum office within the Immigration Service who adjudicates these cases.
So I got to get to a break in a minute. Mary Margaret, this is the country that has always opened its arms to refugees. We know that. You know, give me your tired, your poor, the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor, all of those wonderful idealistic images about America. But when you think about the vast numbers of people who are now streaming or up from the southern, from Central America and wanting to get into this country, it does feel like that whether, you know, the extremes have to be, we got to deal with the fact that there are all extremists on both sides of this. Don't we have to change our immigration policy? We can't keep accepting these huge numbers of people into the country, or can we?
Our refugee policies have been successful, in my view.
Refugees.
From my church, from political life, the number
of... But I'm talking about immigrants in general.
I understand what you're doing.
Okay.
I understand what... But the people out there need to already support legal refugees, in my opinion. Given the way they contribute to the economy, you look at the DeKalb County economic strength that began with the farmers market and has spread to thousands of independent businesses. All of that is positive refugee policy. Our immigration policy can be changed, amended, helped, and supported to be equally as strong for our economy and strong for our humanitarian and value-based goals. President of the United States and Stephen Miller are not for that. That's our problem.
So it would cost us billions and billions of dollars to create the infrastructure, both physical infrastructure, court infrastructure, whatever, to allow for the flow of immigrants we have.
But it's not that hard to do. I mean, again, Congress was prepared to spend this money in 06. They were prepared to spend it in 2013. They were prepared to spend it last year. This is not a hard problem to fix.
Really?
No, this is not a hard problem to fix.
What's interesting is all these asylum seekers are spending $10,000 to be part of the human trafficking trail from Central America up. They're taking all the, and then that money's being stolen from them. What Congress has proposed is just increasing some of the fees, right, to help process and do all this that would pay for a percentage of it. And there are other things we could do there. But you're right, Bill. And, you know, look, what's different? We always talk about, and I heard Beto today talking about the Statue of Liberty as if it was the Constitution itself. Right, and we don't want to conflate those two things, but the spirit of that is exactly what almost every Republican that I know, I'm sure there are a couple of outliers just like there are in the Democratic Party, want to maintain. But the difference is that when that was erected, we didn't have a social welfare system, right, that was the envy of the world. And so not everybody, it wasn't easy to get here. The world has changed. And so what Republicans, most Republicans are arguing for, whether they're supportive of this exact policy of the president or not, is that we want a secure, orderly, and legal, and we want more folks immigrating here. We've got folks who graduate from Georgia Tech who have a job waiting on them, but we can't get them a green card.
Right. Okay. Right? I hear you. You know what? I do have to get to a break. You know what? If it's okay with everybody on the panel, this conversation about immigration, we talked about other issues we wanted to take up. Let's keep talking immigration. Is that all right with
that
all?
That sounds great.
For the last few minutes of the show, you
all
right with that?
Yes, sir.
All right.
I got things to say.
We're going to get to a short break and be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, New York Times Supreme Court correspondent Adam Liptak talks about the court's direction on abortion, the role the court might play in challenges to President Trump, and how the court is changing with Trump's two appointees, Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB and online at gpbnews.org.
Chuck, before the break, Heath made a statement that I wanted to ask you and Mary Margaret about, really. He suggested essentially that because our social welfare system is so strong, so well-funded, because it's well-known all over the world, it's one of the reasons people are streaming across the borders to get here. That, he said, essentially is different from what it used to be. But in fact, at the turn of the 20th century and before, millions of people were trying to flock to the United States to make a new home for themselves. There was no social welfare system. This was the land of opportunity.
Well, and it still is the land of opportunity in a lot of people's eyes. The reality is, if you're a new immigrant to America, even a new legal immigrant, you can't use the social welfare system.
Exactly.
You have a five-year ban before you can use anything. And if you're undocumented, of course, you have no access to anything. Now, if you have a child, yeah, the kid goes to public school. The kid can get Medicare, emergency Medicare, as a U.S. citizen. But undocumented immigrants can't get any of that stuff. But that's a social welfare problem. That's not an immigration problem.
No, but Heath, you are suggesting that that's a lure.
No, it's definitely a lure. And we're also talking about the cost equation of this, right? When we had the Statue of Liberty erected, we were trying to fill the land, right, with people who were coming to work. And I think that's part of what ought to be the basis of our immigration policy going forward. It's not a suggestion that that's the only reason why people come, but there is an additional cost to this today that didn't exist. And it does have a cost on our public education system.
But it also has a financial benefit to us at the same time.
Does.
People pay taxes.
And there are great studies about that, of a cost-benefit over time. But
it's always in favor of immigration.
It's a rational and reasonable argument that we ought to have a more orderly and controlled
Mary Margaret, jump in. Policy.
Some few people are making decisions to come here because of opportunity in education. But the crisis in education, certainly not social welfare. They don't get Medicare. They get Medicaid in isolated, very narrow circumstances. The problem is the dangerousness and the total corruption, the total collapse, and the inability to have any life where they are. They're coming out of desperation. Some are coming for economic opportunity and education, but really it's a flight of desperation where people are making money off of them. People are making money off this tragedy. And we in the United States are not stepping forward in a meaningful, rational way to address that.
What would
we
you do?
We are instead hurting our economy by the... May will be a poor month for our Dow. It will be not a strong way in order for us to move forward with any solutions. The solutions are to stop and support and protect and alleviate the dangerousness and inability to live in any way in the countries that are sending their people here.
So that suggests you agree with those who say what we should really be doing is increasing our aid to countries in Central America where conditions are so horrendous people need to flee right now.
Strategically increasing aid, strategically increasing security, and supporting an asylum and an immigration system for those seeking asylum is what I mean.
Yeah.
In a meaningful way, we're doing none of that.
I do think there's some bipartisan support for that, as we were discussing maybe before the show started. China is making incredible investments, both for economic reasons, but also for political reasons.
Oh, absolutely.
Central and South America, trying to, in my opinion, and in many other opinions, destabilize some of those countries at our back door in order to help destabilize the United States of America for the future. We are in a new version of a Cold War with China. We have to acknowledge that. And so I think there is bipartisan support for aid, investment in infrastructure. But we got to get back to almost like a Monroe-like doctrine where we're saying, hey, this is the Western Hemisphere. We're going to promote freedom. We're going to promote capitalism. We're going to promote economic opportunity in these countries. And that'll help solve some of this.
And the problem is we're literally not doing that anymore. I mean, the programs that existed were canceled by the Trump administration.
Because of Stephen Miller.
They work. These programs do work. We do. I travel frequently throughout Latin America. I see the efforts the Chinese have made down there. It's not Russia that's our global competitor. It's China. You know, they have basically the same land masses. We're basically the same size. But they have five times as many people as we have. We need bodies in the U.S. We have 1.5 million more jobs right now than we have bodies to fill them. So, and we need bodies to do agricultural work. We need people to do service work. We need people that, graduate from our universities and colleges to have jobs available. All of those are being cut under this administration. So it's making legal immigration so much harder that people are choosing not to come here anymore. People choose not to come anymore, then we have a big problem as a country.
China's making those investments in Africa, too. I mean, it's international struggle strategy that we are not competing smartly about.
But again, immigration can be one of those things which helps our economy, helps our society, helps our government. And blaming Congress, I mean, the president does what he does because he's got a political philosophy. But at the end of the day, Congress has not yet taken control of this.
Well, that was going to be my question, Heath, except that Congress is every bit as divided along partisan lines as the rest of the country is right now. Everybody's playing to their base.
All right. And a lot of people say, okay, President Trump did this in order to entice the Mexican government to do something. I think it was maybe threefold. One is to entice the Mexican government to do more, but also to either entice the Democratic Congress to give him something in this regard, or to have them as a, you know, ruse and a foil to post up against and say the Mexican government, which he has done on the Mexican government, is doing more than the Democrats in the House.
Well, what's Mary Margaret, and we're really running out of time. What's really troubling about all this is that if this is some sort of political game that's going on, the people who are suffering are these thousands of children of families who are, you know, coming up here in dangerous situations from Central America, being put into difficult situations
American
when they get
up. American people are worried, I think, honestly, based on American values, about children dying in the custody of custom agents. They also are they honestly, authentically are mad at all of us in politics. I don't believe they are totally in the base. I think there's a lot of middle ground where real people would like to do some productive, rational compromises.
I think Mary Margaret's correct, don't you, Heath?
Oh, I do. I think the numbers are clear, right?
Yeah.
The bases are 25%. There's another 50% in the middle, even
Trump's
on this issue.
Approval rating is 37% maybe today. That leaves a lot of people who care about smart policies and implementation by honest people.
I'm running out of time. One comment from you, and that's going to be it, Chuck Cook.
Well, what we need to do at the end of the day is make sure our government is following the law, make sure they're treating everybody with respect, make sure due process is happening. And if people lose their cases, they should be expeditiously removed from the United States. When that message comes back to Central America, hey, the process in the U.S. is working, then we'll see a reduction in the number of people coming. But it's not working, and it doesn't have any hope of working in the near future.
I'm out of time, Mary Margaret.
I want to congratulate the Spellers. I think they were authentic and wonderful.
Right. Mary Margaret Oliver, Heath Garrett, and Chuck Cook, thank you so much for being on the show today. It was great having you here. A couple quick notes. Monday night, we're going to be up there in Cartersville at the Grand Theater doing our show in front of a live audience. I hope all of you up in Northwest Georgia are going to join us. We still have tickets. Just go to politicalrewind.org and find the link. It's a big theater, so this is one of those few times when we have plenty of seats. And at 2 o'clock on Monday, rather than do a live show, we're heading up to Cartersville. My conversation with New York Times columnist David Brooks. He has a brand new book out. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. That's Monday at 2, and then we'll see you in Cartersville at 7 on Monday night.